Welcome to episode 140 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live August 23rd, 2019. This is a show about Office 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a topic or recent news and how it relates to you. In today's episode, we circle back around to Skype for Business and Teams and preparing for the end of Skype for Business.
ICANN has cloudy things.
What? You have cloud? Who has cloudy things?
ICANN. Or like ICANN has, like H-A-Z. No?
ICANN, huh?
Get it?
Funny. I'm tired. I didn't go to bed till 2 last night.
Oh, come on.
And then my kids don't let me sleep in. But despite the 2 o'clock bedtime and the 7 o'clock, now it was like 6:30, kids waking me up. I am here and you are here. And we are ready to do another episode.
Here we go. We're almost there. It's almost September.
Hip, hip, hooray. What does it almost September mean? We're almost out of hurricane season, or it's supposed to cool off?
September means we're almost getting into like hurricane season for us, right? Like they usually hit at the end.
Right. Because I think it starts in June and technically goes till what, the end of September? End of October?
Yeah, September, October.
I can't remember.
That's usually when we get hit up here, but yeah.
I really don't pay attention to when hurricane season is. I'm just like, it's in Florida, it's hurricane season. You never know when one might come.
Well, we've kind of talked through some of your messed up priorities, right? Before we started recording, you were talking about what would be a good
life balance.
Right. What would be a good,
or my birthday.
A good birthday present? And your response was, a great birthday present would be if my family would just let me work on my birthday so I could catch up on work. It's like, maybe.
Maybe not.
Like, we got to get you out of the house more is what I thought after that one.
Yeah, probably. There was a birthday I asked if I could just go to a conference for my birthday too.
We got to work on this. At least you're still getting your Legos and stuff. So you got that, but.
I do. That's why I work on my birthday, so I can buy my Legos for my birthday. But no, it's, yeah. That means I enjoy my job, right? You're supposed to think work is fun and not exhausting and draining and all of that. It's not a job. It's fun.
It depends on what school of thought you come from. I prescribe to you should find work to be enjoyable, but work is work. If work was supposed to be fun all the time, we wouldn't call it work. We would just call it fun, right? There wouldn't be this other word called work. So it should be enjoyable. But, you know, that whole thing like, hey, your work should be fun kind of thing. No, fun should be fun. Work should be work. And hopefully sometimes those paths cross. But
maybe this should turn into a shrink session. You can be my shrink.
Therapy. Here we go.
You can coach me through my messed up priorities with work and life and fun and birthdays and all of the above.
You do not want my help there. I work some crazy hours because, well, yeah, I mean, we talk about it a little bit, but so as a remote employee who works with potentially customers and colleagues all over the world, it can certainly be a little bit of a strange thing sometimes, right? It might even be like, hey, I'm working here and I'm on the US East Coast, but the person that I'm actively working with is in India. So we don't really cross paths too much. And there's kind of weird times that we can align there, right? Either the very beginning of my day or the very end of their day. So that might mean hopping on a call at 5:30 a.m. and doing a screen share, 7:30 a.m. or whatever it is. It could also mean going the other side and saying like, okay, you know, I started work at 8 o'clock today and I have worked until 3 and I forgot to eat lunch. So I'm going to sign off for a couple hours, but I'm going to come back at 9 p.m. So I cannot respond to emails, but so I can maybe do additional documentation, hop on, do all those things that I was getting like peppered with meeting requests during the day on, just so you can put in the time you need to put on to get to where you need to be. It's a interesting thing for sure to be a remote technologist in the technology space, I think. Because that's my experience. That's where I fall out.
I would hope you'd be a technologist in the technology space. I suppose maybe you could still do sales and marketing in the technology space.
There's quite a bit of that. What about project managers? You know, they can't install servers, but they can help you put the Gantt chart together to get there.
And then they can sit there and crack the whip when you don't get it done on time.
That's what the chart is for.
We all love our project managers.
Absolutely. Don't want to disparage any of them. Oh, boy.
Wow.
Opsgility is disrupting cloud training as we know it with their on-demand platform, SkillMeUp. Their new design focuses on a user flow to better support role-based learning paths with these great new features. real-time, hands-on labs are now included with each subscription to build your skills competence. Hundreds of cloud courses with more added daily to transform your skills for today's cloud-first careers. Role-based learning paths guide you through associated level courses in an easy-to-view layout and tracker. Microsoft Azure and Microsoft 365 certification prep courses and labs to support you leading up to exam day. Learn more and start your free 3-day trial at www.skillmeup.com.
Should we actually focus on a topic today?
We could.
There's one that we could focus on that's kind of applicable to remote workers and working from anywhere or everywhere. And this was a news article we actually brought up. Was it last episode? 2 episodes ago. I don't know. One of the news episodes, we brought up the transition from Skype for Business to Teams and how you should start planning for it. Because come June 31, I think, of 2021, Skype for Business is going away and Teams is going to be that central chat, meeting, phone call, all of the above to replace Skype for Business. But what we didn't really dive into that episode was what that means for the business and things you're going to have to think about, because this is not just a turn off Skype and turn on Teams and they're going to have identical feature parity and there's not new things you're going to have to think about. And I was doing a presentation earlier this week and we started talking about what all those things are that users should start preparing for, just kind of discussing, hey, this is what that's going to mean. And these are some of the reasons you don't want to wait until the last minute to try to do it. So we figured, hey, let's dive into a few more details around what that might mean and things you should start thinking about preparing for, being aware of. Especially, I was surprised the number of people that haven't looked at Teams yet that are still using Skype for Business today. So that is the topic of the day.
Let's get into it. I think it's very important, like you said, to understand the things that you might want to do today, the things that you can actually wait for, and what sits in the middle there for you from a timeline perspective. Because like many things, this is going to creep up on you fast.
Yes, it is going to come up very quickly. And kind of at the root of it is just the feature set. So to dive into, we're not going to dive into a feature by feature comparison, but the gist of it is that Teams has a lot more features than Skype for Business does, and a lot more, I would say it gives your users a lot more power in terms of what they can do, what they can access, what they can spin up in your Office 365 environment. So Skype for Business traditionally was, I can do my chat, I can do group chats, I can do video calls, I can do audio calls. And they did have, was it Skype Meeting Broadcast, where you could do the big one-to-many meetings?
Yep.
But by and large, Skype was a communication tool for that instant message meeting type stuff. It started off as, it was Communicator before it was Link, right? Office Communicator Server, I think, OCS.
OCS, that was in the way back when.
I'm not old. Just disclaimer on there. But that's what it was. It started off as a communication platform where now you start looking at Teams, and Teams is, I would say it takes it to the next level. It turns it into more of a collaboration platform where it still incorporates all of the chat stuff that you had with Skype for Business, but it adds on a bunch more collaborative features that light up a bunch of things in Office 365. Whether it's the SharePoint stuff, it's Power BI, it's Planner, it is integrating other third-party storage. There's just a lot of different things that it lights up that your users can now start leveraging, start accessing, and you may end up with some surprises if you just go turn it on day one and expect it to be a switch from Skype for Business. So where you talked about what users should think about today, what are some of those things that you can think of that it's like, you guys want to think about this today, not 2 years from now? That some immediate actions that you would say users should look at and take?
Ooh, that's an interesting one. So I think It tends to be, for me, maybe looking at how you're leveraging some existing workloads and what some of the impacts might be there. So when we think about that collaborative landscape, if I'm not using Teams today, maybe Teams, Yammer, whatever it is, but I am using something like SharePoint, as the file storage existing in SharePoint Online for those products now, are there material impacts to things like tenant storage for me? Do I need to go back and worry about quotas, do any kind of realignment? Do I need to think about naming conventions, permission schemes? Like, if I've been very locked down in SharePoint, there might be, I'm going to have a rude awakening, right, when I come over to Teams and it's a little bit more open. So some of it's going to be looking at your existing deployment and your existing tenancy and actually understanding usage within it. So quite honestly, you can come back and kind of face the reality that you're probably going to have to train users. You're going to have to be a little bit more open about things, even within existing workloads, let alone thinking about, like you said, third-party storage or lighting up new applications or whatever it happens to be in there, right? Because you're going to turn this license on. And once you enable that license, it's kind of an all or nothing proposition.
I agree. And I think the SharePoint one to me is one of the bigger ones. And it even goes beyond what you kind of talked about in terms of adding more storage space or lighting that up. Is if you've been invested in SharePoint for a while, like for instance, I know clients that have thousands of SharePoint sites and they didn't light up Teams right away. They went and created a bunch of SharePoint sites, whether it's for departments, whether it is for projects that they were working on where they were just focused on SharePoint being that collaborative space. Is you almost need to start mapping out, what do you have today? And because you can take these SharePoint sites now and turn them into Office 365 groups and thus turn them into Office or into Teams, is starting to plan out, is once we make the switch to Teams, what happens to these SharePoint sites? Do we start taking SharePoint sites and moving them into converting them to a team at some point in time so that we don't end up with our old SharePoint site and users spinning up new teams, and now we have two SharePoint sites for HR because we have our original one and then we have the one that got created with Teams? Because if you haven't played with Teams, whenever you create a new team, you're going to get a new SharePoint site that's associated with it because, like you said, files go in SharePoint from a new team. So starting to plan out, what does that transition, almost a migration from a disconnected SharePoint site, if you have some of those, to a team connected SharePoint site, what does that look like so we don't get a bunch of redundancies and essentially duplicate SharePoint sites in your Office 365 environment?
It gets like just so squirrely so fast, and especially if you have a larger estate or so if you've got a big estate and it's kind of been a little bit of sprawl out there, like you've been ungoverned, it's just going to exacerbate that problem for you potentially. And it's just as frustrating if you have a well-managed estate, like you've been very good about planning your information architecture, you're very structured, you have well-defined governance, permission models, and things like that. It all just kind of goes out the window. And you're left with this just thing over here that's all of a sudden going to install itself on everybody's desktop. They're going to be able to sign in from their phone. They're going to be able to sign in from their tablet and, you know, their iPad or their Galaxy Tab or whatever it is. No, it's going to be fun, isn't it?
And they're going to sign in to Teams on their mobile devices. And then I think I was just going into my Teams. I'm pretty sure you can create Teams on your mobile device too. So now you can have your users going just crazy with creating Teams and SharePoint sites from everywhere and anywhere whenever they want to. So that probably leads into the next one that you kind of hinted at is that governance of, maybe you don't need to go turn it on day one, but you're going to want to have something in place when you make that switch, which means you probably do want to start working on it today, working on it soon, because especially if, depending on who you are listening to this and what area of your company you're in, if you're in the SharePoint side and you've been really closely governing SharePoint, but there's a whole other team that does Skype for Business that's planning that move from Skype for Business to Teams, you're probably going to want to go start working with them by the mistake, become really good friends with them, because you're going to want to have some input into how Teams is governed, because it's going to affect your SharePoint governance. On the same time, if you're on the Teams side and you're working on Teams governance, you're really going to have to work well with that SharePoint team to understand their governance. And that interaction between everybody, even Exchange, because Exchange starts coming into this as well, is going to have to become a lot tighter. I do know companies as well where there's a lot of segmentation between those departments. Start working on opening up those channels of communication, that planning, working together now, because due to all those different workloads that Teams spins up, you're going to want to start working on how do we govern this sprawl? Like you said, how do we govern our SharePoint sites? What about all those shared Exchange mailboxes that are going to start getting spun up as teams and groups get created? There's a lot of things to think about there just across those functional teams within your IT department, that communication and that working together really may have to improve over the next 2 years.
Just a little bit, right?
Just a touch.
Oh man, so much to kind of break down within those. So do you want to do things like naming conventions? You know, maybe you want to enforce like naming policies for your teams and your groups, you know, if you haven't started to get into those workloads yet. Hopefully you have. So now potentially you have to go out and get new licensing. When you think about maybe governance carry forward kind of thing, like I said, apps. So what are the applications and services that you're going to want to allow users to consume out of Teams? They may or may not be different than the things that you allow them to consume out of SharePoint today. Because maybe you go and buy like official third-party tools from the SharePoint store, you work with an ISV for that, and then you just come over to Teams and you're like, hey, I heard about bot that does, I don't know, whatever. Let's go ahead and just install the chatbot and go. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, that's a whole nother, and some of those apps too you can govern.
When it comes to email, Outlook and Office 365 are fantastic. But sometimes there are things you'd like to do that aren't implemented. Sperry Software creates Outlook add-ins and Office 365 services that fill in these gaps. For instance, there are Outlook add-ins to automatically print emails and/or attachments, save emails to PDF, send out recurring emails, or how about a warning when you're going to do a reply to all instead of a normal reply? Find these and many more email productivity solutions. Get started today by visiting www.sperrysoftware.com/cloudIT.
So there are some of those settings when you get into Teams where you can have some control over, you're just not going to let users install some of those third-party apps, those third-party bots, as you can go in and block those. But like you said, that's just another area of governance that you're going to have to think about as you start rolling out Teams. I was looking at my Teams apps now and what permission policies you can do, setup policies, how are apps displayed, and even down to the Microsoft services, because some of these apps aren't just third-party apps, right? You can start adding in a Power BI tab to your team, or Stream, or Flow, or Power Apps. All of these different Microsoft services can now be spun up as a tab in an app in Teams. A lot of them are tied directly to a group. So what do you do from that management of those other services, and how do you govern all of those things? And that doesn't even begin to get into private channels, which we don't know how they work yet, but that is something else that you're going to want to keep a look at or keep an eye on as Teams rolls out over the next, or as that rolls out. And how do you govern permissions and private channels and Teams and all these apps that are going to be associated with all of those?
There's that side of it. And then, not to scare anybody too much, but what is Teams potentially going to replace, right? We're kind of framing this, I think, a little bit as a conversation of what if you've got both of these? So let's go back to that HR site thing earlier. What if HR doesn't live where it lives today and it actually comes all the way over to Teams? Like, because there is that potential too, that the duality isn't there, but potentially you have to retire and migrate a process or update it along the way. So there's just so many moving parts, right? And there's no great roadmap for any of this, because everybody is just a little bit different. So it can sound a little bit like a discussion of, oh my gosh, there's so much I need to do. Well, there might be for you. There could be less for me. There could be more for this other person. Really, we don't know until you get in there and start looking.
Right, because there are companies that I've spun up today that just start right off on Teams. They've never used Skype for Business. They've thought about that Teams plan from right off the bat. The next 2 years are going to be pretty easy for them. Other clients like literally just started using Skype for Business a month or two ago. They're going to have a little bit longer, or a little bit more to plan. And kind of like you said, that shift in work is something, and is something that you're going to want to think about. I've done a couple projects now, and I just finished up a project where I really started thinking about this more in terms of Microsoft is starting to frame Teams as that central landing spot or that single place you go to do all of your work. And I think we talked about this maybe a little bit on one episode. I may have made some comment about Teams becoming the new browser for all your Office 365 workloads. Mm-hmm. But Microsoft more and more is selling Teams as don't go to Outlook and go to your other line of business apps and go to Skype for Business and go to SharePoint. It used to be maybe SharePoint started as your intranet and you kind of started in SharePoint and went from there everywhere. More and more, it's start in Teams. Make tabs for your SharePoint news site. Do you have your conversations in Teams? We don't see a lot of email stuff yet in Teams. I still find myself a lot of times between Outlook and Teams, but it wouldn't surprise me to actually see access to like Outlook web access or some of the email stuff starting to pop up in Teams. But do you need to start shifting that mindset and that way you work within your organization where Teams becomes that central place, whether it's developing some third-party apps for your own internal line of business applications? Is it starting to pull those SharePoint sites in, starting to add more and more tabs where it's like, all right, HR team, you're going to start out your day in Teams because that's where all of your HR stuff is located now. So that may be another one of those aspects that you're going to want to start thinking about now and planning over the next couple of years or so is how do you transition that day-to-day work from wherever it is now into Teams? Because it may honestly just make sense and make things a lot easier for your users.
It could if it all works, unless you're a user like me where, you know, anytime I click on like, say a wiki tab or a Word document, I'm on my mobile device and Teams just pops up in air and says, I can't open that kind of file. It all kind of blows up in your face and comes back.
If you wouldn't upgrade to betas.
It's not the beta. Beta life's the best life. Listen, when I hear that, it does become that conversation about let's focus on the things we do today and let's really not focus on, you know, necessarily the technology behind it, but let's understand the process. Let's understand where people work and let's see if we can't understand a way that we can potentially make that better. May or may not be the right answer, right? To go ahead and bring business process A, B, or C over to something like Teams, but it could make sense in the long run. And then how do you do that? How do you approach it? What's the size of your organization? Do you do training with your users today? How do you communicate the rollout? There's just so many moving pieces.
So what you're saying is it depends?
I am very much back to it depends. It's a struggle to give any type of like truly prescriptive guidance because everybody's situation, no matter how much Microsoft, I think, paints it as, hey, Teams is replacing Skype for Business and now there's feature parity and things like that. They are fundamentally different tools. And that's okay in and of itself, but understanding where those differences and impacts are to you versus me is a super difficult question to answer.
I agree. And I think that's why you need to start planning this transition now because, like you said, fundamentally, Skype for Business and Teams are two completely different tools. Teams just happens to have the functionality that Skype did, plus a whole bunch of other stuff. So Microsoft is just saying, hey, Skype for Business to Teams, it's a natural migration. Yes, it is, but it's like a migration and an upgrade and all of that all at the same time.
As IT professionals in the cloud era, sometimes it feels like we don't speak the same language as the rest of the organization. So when stakeholders from finance or other departments start asking about a specific project or team's Azure costs, they don't always realize how much work is involved in obtaining that information, sifting through cluttered CSVs and a complex mess of metadata in order to manually create custom views and reports. It's a real headache. On top of helping you understand and reduce your organization's overall Azure spend, ShareGate Overcast lets you group resources into meaningful cost hubs and map them to real-world business scenarios. This way, you can track costs in the way that makes most sense with your corporate structure, whether it's by product, business unit, team, or otherwise. It's a flexible, intuitive, and business-friendly way of tracking Azure infrastructure costs, and it's only available in ShareGate Overcast. Find out more on ShareGate.com/ITPro.
We haven't even started talking about some of the other stuff that this now comes into play around compliance and DLP and what you even want users to be able to do in chats, because some of those features even get upgraded. Chats, for instance, is another one that in Skype for Business, I think you could, and I've been on a Mac forever, so I can't remember what all is in Windows. Sometimes there wasn't feature parity there. But you could do your text-based messages. You could copy in some pictures, send some files. Now in Teams, you have the whole GIFs, which we had this discussion yesterday. It is GIFs. Nobody call and tell me it's GIFs, because the original founder of the word said it's GIF. And I'm sticking to that. I'm going to start a whole debate on this podcast about GIFs versus GIFs.
Oh, boy.
But you can... spaces and tabs. That's a developer podcast one. You can start putting in GIFs. You can start putting in stickers and memes. And the conversation functionality that's in Teams has an expanded set of what you can do. But Microsoft also gives you some governance control over that. So do I let my users go wild with GIFs and memes and stickers and all of this other stuff? Or do I want to keep it more of that chat-based functionality that I had in Skype for Business? What do you do with videos, with meetings? One nice thing is I feel like they have given you a lot more control over some of that functionality in Teams. But it also means that you should start understanding what all the functionality is there and what can I do when it comes to messaging policies, to meeting policies, to controlling those chats. How do I handle guest users? Because now it's not just, can I chat with external people in a one-to-one chat where I'm sitting in my tenant, they're sitting in their tenant, and we have the whole federated chat, is do I allow guest users where a user actually logs into my Teams environment as a guest user, and that set of functionality changes between external users and chatting and interacting with external users versus interacting with internal users and guest users. So that's another one of those feature sets that you're going to want to understand and start looking at now, is what do I do with guests versus external, and what are some of the features and the functionality that I'm going to allow there, both with that, again, that chat functionality as well as external versus guest users?
For sure. And I think to kind of bring it back, so a lot of this too is eventually, once you kind of talk through it, really we're dialing into understanding individual workloads. And even though Teams wraps all these things together, you still might be able to find success in approaching them individually, right? We started with kind of SharePoint storage and then got to, hey, what about individual chat and where that's stored and how that's governed? And then you can think about team-based chats and where that comes together. And, you know, is it your groups and your Yammer sites, whatever it happens to be, coming out to the other side. I think the thing that I would caution everybody about, and it's really easy in these kind of SaaS products or these new cloud-based workloads to go ahead and get into a little bit of a let's boil the ocean mindset. Let's turn every feature on, let's try out every feature, or let's turn them all off and kind of see what happens along the way, right? We don't necessarily know the impacts, but there's the ability to focus on the core of what these things are supposed to do. So let me enable my collaboration with files, let me enable my collaboration with chat. Do I need to go and block domains? Do I need to block certain file types? Do I need to block certain applications? You know, you'll find this natural progression as you get into it a little bit.
I agree. And I don't know, there's probably all kinds of other stuff we could talk about around compliance and DLP. I mentioned those, but That's probably a whole other podcast. Have we done a podcast on compliance and DLP? And
Maybe very briefly, but we should probably talk about it for like real.
We probably should. We should like bait people with podcast up and coming. And I know we have some listener questions too we need to get to. We got a whole bunch of stuff, Scott.
It's almost like we're falling behind and we need to work on that work fun thing.
This is fun, right? Remember, there's no differentiation. Work is fun. Fun is work.
You're starting to turn it into work.
I know. It's like a project, another project I'm falling behind on. But no, we should do a compliance security, or not security, but compliance DLP policy type podcast. But for now, unless you had anything else about Teams, we should probably wrap this up because we both have real jobs and real meetings. Because this is, yeah, I don't know. I'm tired. I'm just going to wrap it up and stop talking.
Excellent. Well, until next week.
All right. Until next week. Enjoy your week, Scott, or your weekend, and we will talk to you on the flip side.
Thanks, Ben.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.